ask Eunice Foster to come forward, and she's going to talk about PBB contamination on Michigan farms, a decision case. Will you please join me in welcoming Eunice?
Thank you very much. I'll just jump right in and go quickly. PBB contamination on Michigan farms was a big problem in the mid-70s, and this decision case describes that. The premise for the case is that few students remember, and even few students know about, the catastrophic polybrominated biphenyl contamination that affected the Michigan food chain in the early 1970s. Also, that PBB contamination and its aftermath provide an excellent but underutilized teaching tool to address ethics, decision-making, regulatory procedures, operational practices, and the interconnectedness of farm, rural, urban, and suburban sectors of our society. The objectives of the case are to enhance student understanding of the immense decisions that must be made when a disaster occurs, to stress that decisions often must be made using insufficient, unavailable information, and to emphasize that small mistakes can affect a large number of people. I want to show you just briefly a less than 2 minute clip. Less than 2 minute clip that gives you some sense of what the sections, the issues were, some of the problems that were being noted during this time, some of the symptoms.
Something my husband always wanted to do was farming.
My dream was to have a beautiful herd of cattle, a beautiful farm, and I wanted to prove to myself that I could do it.
And we were very happy. The cattle just seemed to start to go downhill. I didn't know why. They got so they were walking funny, their hoofs was growing bigger.
You know how many gallons it is? I didn't know what it was.
Well, then they started dying.
Over the last 3 years, hundreds of farmers in Michigan have been forced to slaughter tens of thousands of dairy cattle, thousands of sheep, steers, pigs, and millions of chickens because of one simple catastrophic mistake. A poisonous industrial chemical, PBB, was mixed into cattle feed instead of the normal feed supplement.
PBB is polybrominated biphenyl. It's not natural, it's man-made. And consequently, when the cattle ate it, they couldn't break it down. I got pictures of them too, where there's just bones in the woods. People used to come and see them. They were deformed, and we were getting an abnormal model. And I started putting the deep freezes. When people started seeing that, they weren't too thrilled.
Okay, that lets you see some of the symptoms that were being observed. PBB is man-made, it's insoluble in water, and it's highly soluble in fat. Additional information about the symptoms beginning in September 1973 was decreased milk production almost in half over a three-week period after they began feeding with the contaminated feed. Cows first decreasing what they ate and eventually refusing to eat the contaminated feed. Weight loss, wrinkled, thickened, hair loss skin, aborted calves, and as you could see, deformed and poorly growing calves. It was almost a year before anyone could determine what the cause was. And as it turned out, magnesium oxide is a feed supplement that aids digestion and efficient feed utilization. PBB is a man-made substance that was used as a fire retardant. Both were produced by Michigan Chemical Company in St. Louis, Michigan. In the early 1970s, there was a paper shortage, so the paper that was used to package PBB, they ran out of that. And they were packaging both PBB and magnesium oxide in brown paper bags with the product name stenciled in black block letters. Magnesium oxide was in packages that said NutraMaster only. PBB was in packages that said FireMaster only. And they were on pallets that were side by side in the same warehouse. And it's estimated that 20 to 30 50-pound bags of PBB, Firemaster, were accidentally substituted for magnesium oxide and mixed into large batches of feed concentrate. When it was discovered that by then PBB was in the food chain, via milk, other dairy products, beef products, contaminated swine, sheep, chickens, and eggs, and so forth, over 500 contaminated Michigan farms were quarantined. And you can see the numbers of animals, the estimated animals that were destroyed, and more than this, over 30,000 cattle, as you can see. There was no compensation for most of the farmers, and certainly during this year period, none of them were compensated. It's been estimated that 99% of Michigan residents had demonstrable levels of PBB in their bodies. And at this time, little was known about PBB. What were safe levels in humans and animals? If there were any safe levels, what were they? What was the effect of PBB on humans? How to dispose of any contaminated animals and products? How was PBB metabolized in the body? And how to decontaminate any polluted facilities, equipment, or land. So how was this case written? It's written in three parts to simulate the unfolding of the crisis, and the parts are to be given to the students in consecutive order to, again, simulate the unfolding. Each section has exhibits and questions designed to promote critical thinking and analysis of what was occurring. It's written from the viewpoint of Dr. Don Islip, who was then Deputy Director of the Michigan Department of Agriculture. Part one is entitled The Problem Unfolds and begins in 1974 with Dr. Islip reviewing in his mind what has occurred since September 1973, when the farmers began noticing problems with their herds and becoming desperate about what to do. Part B, it has been divided into two parts given simultaneously. The first part, the crisis deepens. Recognition that this contamination is widespread and statewide. FDA has set and reset tolerance limits. Questions about what to do with quarantine animals, what to do with animals that have PBB levels that are below the tolerance levels. If you kill animals, what are safe methods of disposal? And the Michigan legislature had decided that not a dime of the state's money would be spent on this problem because they said the problem was created by Michigan Chemical Company due to the contamination, and was a problem also of Michigan Farm Bureau Services that distributed the contaminated feed. So farmers had received no compensation. Part two of part two is highlights or lowlights. They decided to till the animals with PBB levels that exceeded the limits set by FDA. They decided not to incinerate the animals since PBB was a fire retardant and could further spread the contamination. Should they be put in landfills? What to do about soil contamination? Should they be fed to zoo animals or sent to rendering plants? And if so, what about the soap that would come from that? Again, farmers have been stuck feeding these animals for this period of time. There was no federal funding because this was not a natural disaster. This was an industrial disaster. Some farmers have already killed some of their animals because otherwise you had to feed them. When they had public meetings, they needed police escorts, both uniformed and plain clothes, because by then it's very, very difficult, a very emotional issue what's going on at this period of time. And you can see that when it was decided to kill animals, there were different ways that they were being killed, okay? And they were placed into these pits. You will see that in Michigan, the two pits that Michigan, Kalkaska, has over 30,000, and then I didn't really see the numbers that ever told us what were what was placed in Mio. And then this is where St. Louis, Michigan, where the chemical company was located, Michigan Chemical Company. Part C of this decision case then is looking back from 1985. All 9,000 dairy herds in Michigan have been examined. 9 million Michigan residents had consumed some contaminated livestock or livestock products. And a 1977 survey by the Michigan Public Health, Michigan Department of Public Health said 96% of nursing women had detectable levels of PBB in their breast milk. PBB is highly persistent. When it penetrated concrete floors on farms and in feed mills, how to remove it? High pressure steam, vacuum, and disassembly of equipment couldn't remove all of the PBB. Part two of C is kind of an epilogue. Around 1976, Michigan passed laws that made it illegal to sell, manufacture, or own PBB in Michigan. The regulatory levels of PBB were reduced from 300 parts per billion to 20 parts per billion in meat and milk on a fat basis. And then MDA said that if on any animal, any farm that had some level of contamination, they needed to be tested before they could go for sale or slaughter. And as I said, anywhere from 30 to 35,000 contaminated cattle carcasses were buried in Kalkaska, Michigan, and others in Mio. And remaining animals were packed in 55-gallon drums and are buried in a toxic waste site in Utah. Some farm families continue to this day to complain of illnesses thought to be related to PBB, various types of breast cancer. Michigan Department of Community Health monitored over 4,000 families until recently, and now that monitoring is being done by Emory University. However, official records say that no definitive relationship exists between PBB and these illnesses, and there is a lot of disagreement with that. From you find as you read and in various books that have been published, and if you talk to the families and many of the websites. So the purpose of this decision case was to at least make our students aware, but also involve them in how do we deal with catastrophic situations. And this one's happened, it's not the only one. So the teaching note gives extensive list of references, comments about how this case might be used if you want to look at ethics, soil characteristics and their role in environmental cleanup, plant growth on polluted soils, or investigate other instances of environmental contamination, and there are many others that have happened throughout our nation and the world. At this time, I want to acknowledge the USDA Challenge Grant, which provided the funding for the project that led to the development of this case and other cases. The case was first published in 1998, used on campus in 1998. I've used it in several instances. Originally, it was in 5 parts. That gets to be a bit much for students, so I decided to condense it into 3 parts, and that will be submitted for review. These are some of the signs that already exist where that company is. Michigan Chemical Company changed the calling itself to Vesico, and it went out of existence in 1997. You can see some of the signs that are there. There's still a lot of animosity, a lot of resentment, a lot of hurt. When I first used it in class, students knew nothing about it, and they would go and talk to grandparents or parents and come back and say, some said they were too emotional, they still couldn't talk about it. Some gave us excellent interviews of their relatives. But anyway, this is the situation when I first heard of it from Don Islip, who used to be a faculty member in our department. We were talking, I was talking about writing a case, and he said, well, what about this? And I interviewed him, and we did research, and so the case is what you see presented today. So thank you very much. I don't know if we have time for a question.
Yeah, maybe one quick question, and then we'll go ahead and get on with our... Mm-hmm.
What class do you use this in?
Well, I used it in my introductory crop science class because we all talk about students needing critical thinking, analytical thinking, and presentation. So in a lab, a small portion of that was used. They would give a presentation on this. I used it last year in my issues in food and agriculture. I'm not using it this year. I've only probably used it 3 or 4 times since I've written it, and really brought it back out of the shelf last year because during the summer I went to a corn college and a soybean college workshop and met some farmers who had been in my class, and they came up to me from years ago remembering it, asking me did I still use it, and saying it made such an impact on them. So I will just bring it out periodically to use it, just to the critical thinking, analysis, what was done, maybe what could have been done better, how do we prevent such tragedies, and so forth. And again, it shows the interconnectedness of everybody. When you talk about over 90% or 99% of the people in Michigan being affected, we all have a stake in what goes on.
Thank you.